Are you familiar with acorn squash?
Yeah, love it. As a matter of fact, there's some right there.
Acorn squash?
Miss Patton brought that. I guess that's not acorn. I guess that's that other kind of...
I'm not a squash eater myself.
Uh-huh.
I like the old acorn squash, you know, put it in the oven, split it,
mm-hmm.
and then quarter it, and then put a little butter and salt and pepper on it, and bake it. Just put it right in the oven and bake it with a little stuff on it, you know. Just a little stuff.
Just cut it in two.
Just cut it and take the seeds out like you would a cantaloupe or pumpkin.
Yeah.
And then bake it. Of course, now...
And how you season it?
Salt and pepper, butter. Smear butter on it. And put
I've
it
ate it that way.
That's not much seasoning, is it?
Oh, yes. Very good. What are you eating there?
It's good.
That's bird food, ain't it?
You check that tea. It's
good.
It's the sugar and lemon.
Good, I have the machine do the chewing for me.
Oh, you mean to say you? I thought you'd quit that.
Some people like to chew. I never did love to chew. I just have the machine do it. I just swallow.
Well,
this is what I like. That squash in the face.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try a little bit and see.
I could live on that, especially the way other people cook it.
You talk about your wife right before?
You don't always like to, you know, things you have at home.
That's good to me, too.
You don't appreciate as much as you do of what you don't have very much.
Peace out, Brad, too.
I was pushing this away. Which way I was going.
But I'm not too much on squash. I'm a holding cow, man.
What was we talking about in there just then, Willie? I wonder, what would you tell
me? How nice it was that you could drive them nails up better than I could.
No? What was that? You were telling me something about, don't you know? Well, I'll be damned, I thought I'd remember that.
You said your brain had tired down on you.
No,
you had to stop and rest.
Yeah, I know that. you never feel like your brain tired thinking?
I ain't got that much.
Solving problems. I used to enjoy solving problems, but I got out here and you can't solve one to what you get into six more.
Mm.
Last night, they came to bed in there, and I was standing up there talking a little bit, and I thought she'd hear it. The horses were making curious noises. Well, you never know whether they're just, you know, playing or whether they mean it. We got out there, and I found the first thing. I found one of the wires down on top of this cross fence,
mm-hmm.
and didn't see the other horses. Then two horses down yonder, I rode down there. And this little, you know, the one they call Tony that's so smart, he's that little horse. He was a stallion until recently. He was astraddle that fence.
Oh.
He had 1 foot over it. And then the middle, the three wires there, and the middle wire, he had the other foot in between it.
Kind of wove in.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all up because I had walked the fences and reworked them before I put them horses in down there. Well, you know, the animals I deal with are, you know, they cooperative. If they're hurting, they'll let you doctor them.
Mm-hmm.
He just stood there.
Mm.
And
he was hurting.
Yes, he was. That them barbs was hurting him. And I picked up that foot out of the middle stand and set it over there, and he just gradually let his weight off of it, and then he almost got his foot over, not quite, and I helped him with the other one. He was glad to get off of there.
I bet he was.
And then I had to get the barb, the hammer nails out there, you see, and sort of tack them.
This was at night time.
Well, it was 11 o'clock. All account of that white horse was in heat. Mm-hmm. I judge her. She's acting like it. So well, I put her down there. That's the reason she's down there in the doghouse.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to have a light to go out there and do that.
I use a car light.
Is it always some calamity when you've got animals around? Especially, I don't mean just horses.
Just
now,
especially
wait a minute.
Horses.
Well, the cookie brings these horses over here and leaves them. And figures they'll take care of themselves.
Who does this?
Cookie. I don't know that I would have confidence in any animals to take care of themselves by themselves. Without me looking at them every now and then.
There's no animal that I know of that can, a domestic animal. Most all domestic animals need some help, you know. Or either they go wild and then they're not considered a domestic animal.
Mm-hmm.
Like your stock can, they can glean for themselves out in the open. If there's enough, you know, they'll keep moving themselves on until they find sufficient food to starve to death.
I said, God, I wish God was over here sometime, because he can do some of the things. Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, about over here. Oh, yes. Now, yes, I get it back now. The, you told that fella over at Archer at the Arsenal?
Mm-mm. At the Shell plant.
Mm
hmm.
You told him you could. What was it?
I told him I could do anything.
Yes.
But I never did finish that, you know?
No.
I never did. I went, he called me back. About 3 or 4 days, he called me and said, well, we need a man that can do anything. I was an old dumb plowhand, you know. I'd worked a little bit down at Irving Crate and Bass Dump, stacking for Neil.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was going into. I never seen nothing to beat this, see? All modern, new, big old monstrous machines, you know.
Over the shelf place.
Yeah. Nobody else had seen it either. I wasn't by myself. Everybody around me was amazed at such a thing. Well, when I went in, he called me in, and he says, and he was a very jovial man, this government man was. He says, now right off, you know, he called me by my name, my first name, you know, and just butted right up to me. He said, I like you a heap.
Really?
He said, I know you, I like you a heap. Said, you just like an old shoe. And he was making me feel so good while we was leaving the office, you know, which was a great big nice building, you know, and we was going back into the shell plant. Well, we got back there, and I know my eyes must have got big around at the bottom of that glass anyway. When I walked into this big building, this big steel frame building, you know, and see all these big new machines sitting there, you know, and all this roaring, banging, hammering noise going. Never heard such a thing. Excuse me, not even from a pot-belly sawmill. And he said, you say you can do anything, you can do everything and such and so. I said, yeah, man. I said, I can even run. I done put my foot in my mouth, sure enough. And I told him, I said, the man's name was Bardwell. I said, Mr. Bardwell, I said, I made a bad mistake. I said, I thought because I could run that little hammer machine over there in Creighton Basket Company and stack it veneer, I could do anything. See, I was still a youngin', you know. So he carries me in there to this big old lady, you know, and he got a, you walk up, 2 steps up to where your operator stands, you know. And they put this 60 millimeter shell on there. This operator does, you know, and he shows me, you know, what to do. And you got 6 or 8 different motions you have to go through. I mean, movements, moving dials and things, you know, to do each shell. It's that you have to do each shell, you know. You set up everything. Of course, it goes in at an automatic cutoff, you know. They got automatic stops because all these shells have to weigh within a, well, it's a little tolerance there. It's a little tolerance. And so Mr. Barber told me, he said, you just stand right here by this man on the step. I was on the lower step, you know, and he was standing up here, and I was like him, you know. And I was watching him, and I said, oh, that ain't going to be as bad as I thought it was. So Mr. Barber told the man to hop down, told me to get up there and saddle, you know. Had these two big levers up there. You pull them, you know, one way and push one the other. And the big electric motors that big around, about a 50 horsepower motor, you know, to pull that thing. There I was, you know, big guy, little you and everybody else. You know, I got up there and I put the shell on, and I remembered this little old lever about that long there. He just flipped that down. You put the shell up there and you just flip that down, see? And that's all you have to do is what they call an air chuck. It grabs it like that and holds it, see? Well, then you got this thing that's got a knob on it about like a shift gear knob, you know, old time flow shift gear knob. And you can rotate your block head, they call it, for your various tool cuts. Well, you rotate your tool around, you want you to lock it in position, you mash your button over you, it goes up and then starts the profile of that shell and trims off the excess weight, you know, metal, which goes into a pan under that and such. Well, I get put the wrong tool up there and mash the wrong button, and it cuts the shell right half in two and goes right on through like that. You know, I stand there looking at it. I don't know how to stop it. An old man Barber just laughing, you know. He was over there just laughing. Because it's natural. They made the machine backwards, see. They made the machine wrong. When you make your last cut, see, you trim the end of your shell, which is the last cut you make. Well, this boy was operating the thing. He left it that way, see, because he knew what his next move was going to be. I didn't. I was thinking, you know, he had turned that head block, they call it, with all these tubes. I thought he turned it to make the next cut, had it ready for the next cut. That's the way I'd have done when I take my shell off after I'd finished cutting it out and everything, forming it. Just as I go take that off, I'd move that block in and put my tool for my next cut up. You know, have it up for start. And they laughed. Well, I just got plumb disgusted. And an old country boy, no education, you know. I just backed off and quit. And Barber, he laughed until he cried. He just laughed. He just couldn't take it, you know. And he was from Alabama. He was from Montgomery, Alabama. You know, that's where a government headquarters, ordnance headquarters for the South is, Montgomery, Alabama. You know. Everything heads up there, the South, Southeast. And might be for the whole world, I don't know, whole army. But anyway, I know that was headquarters. Everything, I could have stayed on there. I didn't have to go in the army, I Navy either one. All my brothers was in service, and all my friends and everybody I knew was in service, see. My age, it was healthy, and I considered myself healthy and a good man at that time. And every time I walked down the street, you know, they was hollering 4F at me, you know, 4F and 4F, 4F, you know, because I wasn't in service. And even a lot of my kin people, you know, was peeved at me because like my first cousins and such, you know, they were in service and I wasn't. Why come I didn't go and get killed and shot at, you know? Well, you get to where you feel like, you know, you just got to do something. So I go and put my foot in my mouth and I go up to Gainesville. I tell you about going up there trying to get in the Navy with a first class rating. Yeah. They wouldn't have me, and whenever they found out, the Army found out, see, I was fooling around up there trying to get in the Navy, they'd draft me, then offer me this job.
No, I would not.
Yeah. But I had...
Well, Willie, can you look at anything and, you know, if you don't know how, I heard you talking about Doc. He could look at something and... tell how it was done.
Most of the time.
Amazing.
Most of the time I can. I'm not as good at it as I was. I'm like God. I'm getting old. I shouldn't have said that.
Your mind
gets
tired.
Hmm.
What'd you do down to old man Edwards' place?
I run a little old nailing machine. Take about 3 horsepower to run it. And you know, and anybody could operate. You just stick this 2 pieces in there. You know what a mater lug is? They used to make them out of wood. They call them lugs. It's about that deep. Well, it looked like a cherry box or a grape box that you see in, you know, these little wood slatted boxes, about that deep and about that square. They used to put tomatoes up in the same thing, called lugs.
Yeah.
Well, on either end, there's a hard board, I mean a solid board, about like that and about that long.
Oh, yeah.
Well.
And then you got those little wafer boards.
That's right.
On top of.
Well, what I was doing.
That makes you crazy.
Excuse me. They had these boards, the one before was too narrow. And when they didn't rip out the special width board for that, the stick that they call end sticks and header sticks for orange boxes nailed on top of that made exactly the right width according to standard requirements, you know. And so they'd have a lot of this stuff left over, so the old man had this machine built, see, that all you had to do was put this board up under that. And just like you'd rack this spoon on top of the fork here, and you just take your hand, you push it up in there, and this thing, and you mash your foot on a little pedal, like that, this thing comes down and drives three nails in it, see? One at either end and one in the middle. And that's all you had to do, and that's what I done. I thought, man, I can do anything. I said, man, he says, are you a machinist? I said, yes, sir, I can run a machine. Well, I thought he meant, you know, I call that a machine. Man, in our time down at Irving, there were some whaling machines down there.
Well, how did you start out down at Irving? Did all the fellas take a hand in that?
Well, I got, you know, I was telling you about the old man, my daddy was second cousin. That's the reason I got on. I would never have got no work down there, hadn't been there. Not that young.
You mean he just give you a job because you was kinfolk?
Mm.
I guess people in the community would take jobs like that, wouldn't they?
Oh,
raise a family on a job like that.
Oh, sure. You know how much that job was paying before I went there? See, I went to work just at the beginning of the Wage and Hour, you know, Act, when it was approved and passed. That's whenever I went to work, actually, if you know what year that was. You know, President Roosevelt passed that law that they'd have to pay a wage, minimum wage.
Yeah. In some industries.
Yes. And most all manufacturing industries had to pay it. Well, Edwards could fell in that category. You know how much he was paying before that come along on that same job there?
No.
$1 for 12 hours.
$1 for 12 hours?
$1 for 12, 90 cents an hour.
Uh-huh.
I mean, 9 cents an hour. 9 cents an hour is what he was paying to run that thing.
And the wage law, how much that bring up to?
Brought that up to, I guess, about 20 cents, 25 cents. I drew, he gave me 35 cents before I left him over there. Which was, you know, that when they passed that act, in the very next year they raised that thing, the minimum on that thing, you know, because it's still too low. Well, I started work then. That's when I started work.
Well, you started under the new dispensation, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
But you never...
Oh, gracious. Don't come out here with too much more.
You never...
At least another bushel.
I don't... Just get a little bit. You never kept a job very long. You just worked on your own.
I never had really but three jobs in my life.
School boy?
See, I had, you might say, one job, two jobs, since I came out of the Army, other than my farm deal, which I don't count, which was about 4 years. I throwed 3 years and lost, I don't know how many $1,000. We got
keep all you'd saved.
See, I didn't drink, gamble, run around, didn't do nothing, and while I was in service, I saved all the money, bought bonds.
Yeah.
And see, was fortunate enough to stay with that Archer for about 18 months before I went to service. And by the way, as I was going to say, I finally got to be Barbara's top sidekick. You know, I didn't have no education much, and there was no, you didn't have to qualify as far as education is concerned. If you do the work, they'd give you a job.
Yeah.
But I just merely got in there and proved myself that after he laughed so at me, you know, and he wouldn't let me leave. He said, no, he said, I hired you, you know. He said, I called you in here to give you a job. He said, you're going to work for me. I'll work for Uncle Sam. And he, you know, it just, I didn't like him. Didn't like the man at all.
After he laughed at you.
I didn't like him at all. I did before because he seemed to be, you know, he said, oh, well, that's the difference between, you know, being grown up and having a good education and everything. I thought, you know, he was against me after I thought he was for me, you know.
Uh-huh.
But he was just joking with me. It tickled him to no end because I did this. Because it was a frequent act of everybody that ever fooled one of them machines that did this.
But it hacked you then.
Oh, yes. It bothered me.
Yeah.
And so.
Right fresh from that nail mill.
Oh, yeah.
Great factory.
So anyway, I had I went to right off to operating. That's what they call a number one rough machine. See, those old forging come from out of Alabama and Tennessee and up in there where they mine iron, you know, made them out of old iron. Old forging, there was black smutty. You'd get dirty all over in that what they call number one roughing. That was a nasty job. That old grease, you know, where they forge that stuff, it leaves a film of grease and something like coal dust all over that, them old shells, you know. Well, they were just chunks of iron. And what you had to do was, the inside was formed. But this chunk of metal, you had to cut off all that excess metal. Sometimes it'd be out of round so bad until you'd have to throw them away, you know. They'd be so out of round, you'd have to throw them away. But if it was a half inch out of round or something like that, the machines that they had over there would cut it down and true it up. Make the prettiest thing shiny, pretty shiny shell, you know, after you cut all that old black off.
Yeah.
Well, I mastered that pretty quick, I thought. After mastering it, they put me on number two roughing, which... See, on number one, you get all that old nasty stuff. You just stay nasty like a nigger all the time, dirty, you know. And then he shifted me up the line. Had three lines of machines going up through the building. He had number one, number two, number three rough in, and number two machine, they call it. Number two, number three machine, and such as that, you know. And right on up the finish stage, which the finish, when you come to the finish, it just taking off a little fine shaving to make everything come out to the weight, right balance, weight, you know. You know, a mortar shell is shot by the weight of the shell against the anchorments of powder that is left clipped each fin of the missile as it goes out, you know. And, so I went to the second operation, which was, oh, I thought that was nice, man, that's nice. And this is something that was amazing to them. I, you know, I was telling you about, I invented several things and saved the government a whale of pile of money.
You all just have a good time and sit there a long time and eat that ice cream.
We got a little
I'm going to try to. I enjoyed it very much. It was wonderful. It just what I needed. It was nice. But there were so many rejected shells, and I've always been a conservative person. I hate to see things
take care of stuff. Yeah,
I want to take care of this, that. I got old tubes that's 25 years old. First tubes I ever bought, I've got them. I may not be using them, but I got them home now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but anyway.
Well, why don't you get you some new ones and let me have some of your ones?
Well, and then I'd be getting rid of my good tools, because you can't buy them as good as them. When I get on a real fine job, I use my old tools because they're better tools. But anyway, I said to Mr. Baldwin, Mr. Baldwin, there's Mr. Wood, and there's Mr. Conley, Conwell. I done about forgot all of that. That's been back in 1940. 2-1 and 2. Back in the early part of the '40s. But anyway, I said to him, I said, you know, I said, what are y'all gonna do with all these shells here? They just had a haystack probably piled up, you know. I said, well, they couldn't use them because they were rejects. The government had failed to accept them, wouldn't have them. You eating your ice cream?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I better get on mine then.
I was eating squash.
Oh, you eating squash with ice cream?
I'd rather have squash than ice cream.
Oh, good day. I didn't know you loved them so well. I could have trucked them over you to no end. Anyway, I got to cooling around there with them things one day. They had a test that they run on that tail on a 60 millimeter, about the size of this here, a little bigger than them, about that long. Just about this big was a hole in the end that way. Screwed your fuselage, and they, you know, and you know, your thing with the pins on that made it go, you know, kept it in line. And them threads, they had a tube about that long, had threads on both ends. And it had a no-go stamped on the end of it. Had no-go stamped on the end of this, end of the handle right behind the threads. And the on the other end had go and no go. The no go was what you checked it by. I mean, you know, if you no go only screwed in three threads, it was perfect. If you go went all the way in, it was too big. Your machine was cutting a loose thread, what they call a loose thread. Well, I got old boy out to the blacksmith shop to make me a thing with a handle on it about that long. And on this end, you know, like a chisel. And he made it about that big around on the opposite end from the end the hammer would hit on. And then I had him to drill me a hole that perfect shell would fit not quite in. And I got on the workbench one day at noon. I take my hammer and I hit on the end of that shell, and I could hit that shell with that hammer and that swedge and make it stop where I want it to. And so I told Mr. Barr one day, I said, I believe I got that remedy if the government accept it. And I had one that's real loose, you know. And I showed it to him, and then I take it and put it over there and hit it with a hammer. Hand it to him. And it was still a little too loose. So I take it, and I said, well, all I've got to do is hit it again. So I take it and hit it again. And hand it back to him. Like two threads screwing up on a no-go. He said, that's perfect. That's good. That's perfect. He said, tell you what. He says, you just go over there and had women working there. And get you a couple of women and go through that pile of shells and let them go back through with the tail gauge, see. And all the shells that you can repair them, if that's all that's wrong with them. Did that, and that day, he claimed, I made the government about $1,000, even back then when money was cheap. I mean, you know, you could buy money for nothing almost. And so I got started off there. I said, shoot, I said, that, the nose end had the same problem, see, on the nose, because that's where you screw your detonator in the end, and the threads had to be just right. So I got a boy out, a smithy out there in the blacksmith shop to build me one of them, fit that in. So then they come up with a little pad, paper, just like that. And they printed on that all the things that would cause that shell to be a reject. And they made wire baskets that you could put a dozen shells in. Nose up. That's the whole big hole loading end of it, you know. And them baskets had it fixed just like a milk bottle basket on them shells, sit straight up in there. And when these girls found one, if it was a no-go on the nose, or the loose nose thread, All you had to do is just check it. They had the pencil and pad right there. You just check it, tear off one flip, stick it not down in the cavity of the shell, and put it in the basket. And I started that thing and worked that thing for 2 months, I guess. And then I trained a man to take it because they wanted me to do another job. By this time, I was working 16 hours a day. I was working a regular job and helping a government experiment on a machine that would reduce the number of rejects in shells. Why, that barber, he thought I could do anything. He didn't think there was nothing I couldn't do. Them government inspectors from Birmingham, Alabama would come in there and they hardly fool around with barber. They'd come right on back to my place of business. They done, by this time, they done put me in a, built me a room about big as this, that porch and all this out in here, you know, to experiment with. And you know what I got for? A lot of long, hard hours. And regular pay. I worked down there 7 days a week making a tool that would, it was so many of the operators was getting hurt. One boy got his eye put out. And it was a wild thing. The government was needing shells bad. And they got running them machines in top speed. You see, there was 10 speeds to them machines. And on the third setup, where they run them, after your second roughing cut, you went to a third cut there that you could afford to run a high-speed cut on it, see. Now, the finish cut was a middle speed. There was 4 stages they went through. There was 4 different machines they went through. And on this third machine, that metal had come off of that sometime. It'd be just like I've seen it run out 6 foot, right straight out. Go right by your head, you know. And then they finally made them wear these full masks over the face, you know. Because this boy got the piece, just shot him right now. You know, I mean, it runs off like barbed wire, you know. Like a piece of wire. It just comes right off of that machine. Zzz. So then I invented what they call chip breaker and eliminated it. It taken about, I guess I stayed with it for about 50 hours. And I got that thing whipped. Oh, they told me about what a good job I'd done. Patted me on the back, you know. They let me go fishing when I wanted to. Give me straight time. But that was all. Straight time, me working 16 hours a day, you know. I mean, you know, if I happened to be off, got sick or something, they paid my wages right. I never drew under a full payday.
Goodness, brother.
But old Bob Barber would say then, ain't nothing that boy can't do. And I was just a young one then. What I mean, I was just 21 years old.
But you got out of that because they was calling you 4F.
Yeah, man, I got. Well, another thing, they was working me to death. I'd leave the shop and go to the house, lay down and get a nap before I'd go to sleep good while somebody would be knocking on the door wanting me to come back to the shop. And when I come home, go back, get back to the house, there'd be a note on the door for me to come down to the shop, something happened. That's so help me, I sit here. And Bartle got so mad with me whenever I got my notice to go in the Army, and I told him, see, he could have saw it. He could have cut it off just like that. He could have stopped me from going just like he could cut a water spigot off. But I just got sick of this working. I'd work so much, and I was just plumb sick.
How long did that last?
About a year.
Right steady.
Never got no time off.
6 days a week?
Seven days a week. Well, I finally long last, I quit working on Sunday, but I worked. Big part of the time I was there, I worked 7 days a week. And I ain't kidding you. A lot of days, 16 hours. And I had enemies. See, Barbara wanted to make me Conway was superintendent. He wanted to put me on a day shift altogether and use me to train people, you know, on a day shift. Because, you see, working three shifts. And they never put a greenhorn, never put him on a night shift. Always put him on 8 o'clock in the morning, you know. Work day shift, 8 to 4. And always give a new man 2 weeks on the day shift and then put him on night shift, see. And then they'd shift back some of the boys, you know. They'd shift it around to make the crew of men, you know, when they'd fall short or something, while they'd put the man, so he wouldn't, you know, it's easier to work a man in the daytime than it is at night when he's new, you know, and don't know what he's walking into. So, they were going to put me on, Conway wanted to put me on day shift altogether and just do experimental work and help these young sprouts, you know, or people that's coming in there to get jobs. I worked, there wasn't a job in there that didn't work. I worked every job in the shop. I mean, every job. And I did every job that was in that shop after they found out that I could work, that I was interested in that, what I wound up naming it, the hospital. The shells, you know, defective shells, I named it the hospital. We even set up a place for it. And went out in the hills back then, cut a big oak tree down and got a block out of that oak tree, oh, about this big around or bigger. And it stood up about that high where a man could use it, you know, to swedge them shells. Use it for a swedging block. Because sit down on the concrete floor there, you know. And it didn't make so much racket, and it didn't jar your workbench, and it didn't, it was easier. You didn't have to hit it such a hard blow. Because it was solid underneath that old big oak, live oak block. Well, after I got that thing started, then they began to run me all, they run me up one hole assembly line right on throughout, and then they put me up on what they call the government finals up there, you know, to training these women how to find defects. See, I got to where I could almost look at the shell and tell whether it was ounce overweight or not. And I ain't bragging or complaining. I just had a knack that I got interested in them shells. I got a big interest. And all what caused it is that man laughing at me. When he laughed at me because I cut the end of that shell off, you know. I was dead dog determined to prove to him I could do anything that was in there, and I did it. Actually, he told me, you know, that I'd done hired on and I had to work. I decided, well, shoot, can't do me that way. I'll show you. And I, any time back then when I was a kid growing up, I'd prove you, man, if you said I couldn't do it, I'd die to do it.
Well, he was. They was getting ready to advance you. All it would took would be a little more time.
Oh, there was. I was going advanced all the time, but I couldn't take it. It's just too much. There wasn't anybody else in the shop. Me and one other man was the only one that cared whether that shop run or not. The rest of them was that sundown payday. You see, I was interested in it. It wasn't a pay I was interested in. I was interested in. You see, I went. I worked 2 weeks or better, 8 hours every night after I'd done made my 8-hour shift working with the federal government, mm-hmm. not with the local government plant there, on this invention, trying to invent a thing to keep this machine from cutting this reject so much.
Yeah,
never worked out. We had that joker fixed though. Of course now. This machine was not a concoction of mine or this federal government man's. It was a machine that had been rejected in the beginning of the manufacture of the millimeter mortar shells, either 60 or 80 millimeter, whichever one it might have been. It was a rejection, and he brought it down there. Barbara had told two of these men from Birmingham about me, and they had shipped that thing down and a man with it, that had helped to build it, invent it. And between me and him, we were supposed to perfect it and never could. We got it where that thing, the one feeding it, if you was feeding it, you stood like on this side, like a water wheel turning. It was a big thing. Oh, it turned about 8 foot in diameter. And it had holes in the sides of that, holes in it. And at a point, it was a lot of cylinder, electrical. It was all electrical operated. And of course, a machine like that today would be simple. Most any electronic man could make it work. Or most anybody that had any experience mechanically with this modern equipment, you know, could. But at one spot, that shell would come loose. He had a basket of shells here to work, and a basket over here to put them in. And you had a person that walked behind. He moved this basket when it was emptied over here to this space where this full one was taken off. If somebody was dragging off ones over here and they're stacking them up here, well, this man stood behind me. He just shifted a woman, and she just shifted this empty around. And it was fast. You were just going like this, you know, just like that through that. In other words, you put that, when you put the shell in this side, no, you're taking it out from this side. You put the shell in, but it threw this other one out. You had to catch it and put it in the basket. But this, you had to put this one in. You place this one, and you had to do it just like that. The thing would hit just like that. Well, up here in the middle. As this thing was coming up in the middle, when it would hit, it'd go clunk, 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 like that, you know, every time it go around. And it taking 48 shells to make a full load in that machine, see? 48 shells in the whole wheel. And every time it'd go clunk, there's two sets of threads drilled. There was two holes drilled and two sets of threads already put in it. Just every time it said clunk. And we worked on that thing, I guess, 4 or 5 weeks, 8 hours a day, Sunday, right on, 7 days a week. And we got it to where it would work. I mean, we got it to where it would, you could see the old way of doing it. It taking a lot more labor, and it taking 2, 3, 4 machines, 4 separate machines. There's 4 separate operations. Well, this year there was only one machine, did the whole thing in one time. Both ends of it was worked on at the same time. You see, you got your reamer that sizes the hole for the thread, goes in there first, and then your tap goes in and taps the threads. And then you have a thing on the other side there, that a blower, a hole, this nozzle goes up in there and blows out all the shavings. It goes in a hood that comes in like that and blows all them shavings, and they go down into a catch pot down there, see? And when that pot gets full, you have to dump it out. And that keeps the shavings, you know, from going all over the whole house. When they blow it, that little hood comes over. But it was all automatic, and that thing worked like a charm. But it produced more rejects. Oh, it was bad for rejects. Oh, that thing was bad. And we used, we found out there's one manufacturer, there's one company that could manufacture a tap. See, it taking an inch and a quarter tap for that 60 millimeter to tap in them nose threads. And there was only one company that would produce a tap that would stand up to that strain. Mm-hmm. The other companies that we used, sometimes that tap would go in and just crumble. I mean, you know, the constant. It was just going boom like that, and that was a shell, you know. And then you'd have to, of course, change the taps every. Or we timed it to, you know, so that we wouldn't run so many rejects. We'd time the number of shells. We'd run so many shells and say, well, that's like running a full load of 48. We'd say, well, that's 48 shells. And then we'd check our taps, see if it's chipped or how damaged they were. And then we'd start up again if it was all right and run so many more and stop and check our taps, see how they were coming to keep from running, you know, so many rejects. Because actually, time that shell gets around, it's got to go 24 before you find out it's running a reject. Well, if you don't catch it right off, you can run 100 or so shells there, you know, and you've got reject, that many rejects. And of course, the government was very much dissatisfied with the fact that it was producing so many rejects. And they finally pulled us off of it and wouldn't let us fool with it no more.
Well, let me tell you. You were going right from a farm boy right into a factory.
Mm. Yeah, I went right in there.
Well, you'd never done anything but work a mule.
No. Well, I had, you know, I told you about I used to steal my daddy's nails and tools and things and go off and drive them and anything I could get my hands on to try to build something, you know, concoct something.
No.
I think most everybody has a best place to pit, you know, whether they're constructive or destructive or like this or that or the other. Pretty well, I think everybody has a place they should be.
You mean?
I think that was my place, but I left it. I really do. You see, they begged me to come back there when I was discharged, come out of the Army. They begged me. Yeah, man, they begged me. That man come see me. It's closed down. Of course, it's closed down then, but they went into what they call it, it was a governmental sponsored after the war project, you know, to put people back in work and to build things, you know. I don't forgot now what they did over there, but they did a lot of I don't remember now what they were building over there. They built some things.
Gotcha.
It was supposed to have been domestic, useful, you know, for the public. But that...
Well, you must have, I don't quite see how you'd have had enough training, even to use a hammer.
Oh, I tell you, I just had my mind set on this thing, you know. I doubt I would have did much with it if it hadn't been that old man Barber laughed at me so for cutting that first shell. I always will, he hackled me there, you know. Heckle me, or however you say it, you know.
You hadn't even drove a tractor.
Oh, no, there wasn't no tractors around. Oh, there's a few old Fordsons, but I didn't. You take what few old tractors there were, why? There was, yeah, there was a fella over there had an old F-12, old Iron Wheel F-12 International, one of the first old F-12. Old Iron Wheel job. The steering wheel run right straight down over little old gas tank was round like that, sit right under an iron shaft. It went up there and the gears and everything was out and open. And it wasn't boxed in, you know. You see, when you turn the steering wheel, just kid you to turn the steering wheel. And I didn't drive one. When I drove, first tractor I ever drove was a F-12. And it was the same darn F-12 after I come out of the Army in 46.
Yeah.
That same tractor I drove it. Of course, it was wore out, beat you to death. You had to stand up on it, you know. You couldn't sit down. It just jiggled your guts out.
Great.
You ever drive one of them old iron wheel tractors?
No.
You've seen them. No. You know what I'm talking about.
They're like driving a boiler.
Oh, man. Expect to explode any minute. Well, I enjoyed it. But, you know, I tell you what's the truth. I had opportunities galore over there. When I come back, Chase Maddox, he was just dying for me to come back over there. He sent word by everybody that he knew that knew me. And 2 years after, 3 years after I was out of the Army, I went to work up at Gainesville with that old H. Miller in the pump business. And we got a hold of, I don't forgot the name of the pump now, but it was one of those, what you call them pumps? It's got a shaft, runs all the way down to the bottom of the well inside. And they got, this is a 6-inch job, and they had at each joint, at each 10-foot joint, they had what they call a spider to hold that shaft. That run that impeller down the electric motor setup in and run that impeller in the bottom of the well, screwed that water out of the hole. That was one of the early concoctions, you know, of, getting water out of the ground without using a lever pump. And anyway, this was out at University City Dairy. Went out there and we pull that thing out and those spiders are wore out. And the only thing I think about was Archer and this old man that I knew over there that always made my tools for me. Whenever I wanted something, I'd draw it up for him. You know, I'd go down there and stay with him, explain how I want it made, and he'd make them. The blacksmith shop. They'd make them things. And so I told Mr. Miller, I said, what about letting me take one of these things over to Archer? I said, I know them folks over there. And I said, I believe they'll do you a good job. Build you some of these things you won't ever forget. And I went over there, and when I walked in, they seen you coming, and they thought sure I was coming for a job. And they thought I was ready and good work.
Yeah.
And I never forget Charlie Andrews. He said, I sure am glad to see you come over. He said, I hope you want a job. I said, well, I got a job. He says, I thought sure you would want to come over here and go to work. And I said, no. I said, I wanted to get you to do some work for me. Charlie Andrews, the son-in-law of the old grandpappy over there, the one that started that thing, you know. And of course, Charlie Andrews is about 65 years old now, 70 somewhere along there. I said, no, Mr. Andrews. I said, I showed him the thing. And I said, I wondered if you could build some of these. He said, yeah, we can build these things. He said, you know we could build it, make them. But he says, it cost you more than what you could order them from the manufacturer. It cost you 3 to 4 times more. He said, just ordinarily speaking, not knowing exactly what this thing would cost at the factory. He says, I imagine this thing would run us by the time we set up and got the material to make them, cut them out of them, it cost $15 a piece. I said, great God, man. I said, let me go. So I pulled out of there, and we could buy them for 2 1/4, I believe it was, from, I believe, Syracuse, New York, where that pump was made. You could buy them, I believe, 2 1/4 a piece. And they were already built to perfection. All threads and everything, the bushings and everything was to size and all. And like Charlie said, we might make them things and said, come up with a whole batch of them that would be, say, just a fraction of a few thousands undersized, and you couldn't get that shaft in there. Or if you could get it in there, it'd freeze up on you after turning for a while. And, you know, friction, the drag on it would cause it to blow out the motor or something. And, we got them things, put them in there. It wasn't no time before the shaft broke. I told that man, that wasn't Black, that was Black, C.C. Black I was working for, not Miller, Black. I told Black, I said, now you know, I said, this shaft, it comes in 10-foot pieces too, you know, put together, 10-foot long. See, what you do, you make all this up inside of your pipe, your casing, pipe, your drop pipe, and then you put all this back in the hole with a big derrick, you know. And as you come together, you have to slide this shaft. And by the way, this shaft was 3/4 inch cold rolled steel. I mean, it heavy. And if it ever got away from you, it'd knock the bottom of the well out. And I was scared of fooling with that thing. Man, I was scared of that thing. You know what? I've got to get through this thing here. First, I better run up to the house. I know I ain't gonna be able to stay on that long as full as I am, but I'm gonna try.
Well, I thought you'd sue.
No, man, I got to tie that thing in.
Oh, that's fine. Excuse me.
Oh, Lord, and I don't even remember now. I never marked this thing. I'm thinking I'd never need it. I said, he's got all the other things in here. If I move this up, add $5 more to this bill, would that hurt you?
I don't know.
That, actually, you know, this thing here is getting, this bill is getting pretty strong here, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure, I know.
How much you think is in this bill?
$4.
We're going to put that much in Mexico.
$4.
Oh, yeah. Do you think it'd be all right?
That's what I figured.
You think $40 would be too much for all the electrical I've done? Huh? Okay, let's see this.
I haven't kept up.
Four.
I didn't figure any use of both of us to keep up with it. No, sir, I never have come out at CS, even when I buy tools down there.
Some of my better tools are from Rye, Sears, and Roebuck.
Yeah, but you just lucked out on it, or else you just knew what you were looking for, and I didn't.
Supposed to be 50 there. I'm losing 50 cent up there. I didn't bring down my 5. Ain't that something?
Well, I don't deny they have good stuff, Willie, but
you buy their Craftsman. It costs you in the range neighborhood of you other better grade stuff anywhere. Now, you can break a wrench, one of them Craftsman wrench kit back then, they don't argue with you. They used to, and I don't know how they are now, but they used to. So what on the count of that, he just fired you another night. You didn't break them that often, though.
But some of the things they put Craftsman on are not.
that Dunlop is what I always try to steer away from.
I got that vice grip out there that's got Craftsman on it. Mm-hmm. And it's as tedious to use as.
Well, they'll skin your hands anyway. Any kind. Even where you better grade vice grips will.
Yeah.
You know, vice grip is the original, just like people say skill saw, when actually skill didn't make one saw.
Yeah.
These other folks made electric saw.
Yeah.
Like your vice grip.
Yeah.
Now, the regular vice grip, I got a pair of them, and they old as the hills. I don't know how them darn things are.
Yeah.
And they work good, but I've used them and still use them. They're about wore out. But now, I'm speaking of vice grip, the original manufacturer of the vice grip pliers.
Yeah.
You can buy Sid and Roebuck vice grip pliers, or you can buy a Western Auto and all them different types.
Mm-hmm.
But that old VISGRIP is the only pair of them things I've seen that's worth a two.
Yeah.
Now Roebuck puts out some that I've never fooled with them, but I've heard that they're pretty good. Now they got a. That's all right. They got a big ham. They put out a big pair. Master pair. They claim pretty good.
Gosh, I don't know how I've done that.
I'll
pay you a little on it.
No, I can't do it.
How much you want me to pay on it?
Hey. Is this payday?
About as much payday as I get.
Yeah.
How much y'all gonna pay you?
That's all right. We'll just let it keep climbing and I get enough to buy me a boat.
Well,
you ain't gonna get that boat out there for me. I might as well go buy me one.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna let you buy me one. I just keep working till I work. I'll get enough to buy me a boat.
I wanted to get a television. And Sears has televisions, you know, I could use, and they have a good service. They'll come around. Mm. They're on the beat. But you know, I'm just afraid to buy anything major with them.
Most of the appliances are good. Your washing machine and stuff at one time was the best made in the United States of America anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Washing machine was.
Yeah.
That went right on through into the automatic.
But you didn't know that until afterwards.
Yes, sir. I knew it. I used to deal all together with Sears Roebuck. And the Blue Book showed Sears making the best washing machine even back in the, right after World War II. Old Ringer type.
Yeah. Yes.
And it followed right on through into the automatic age of washing machines. Now, I don't know who tops it now, but the last I heard, Sears was still holding out the best washing machine. You want to pay this? If you don't, it don't make no difference to me, because I'll pick it up tomorrow the next day. But
let me have it, and I'll pay as much as I can.
Pay as much as you can?
Mm-hmm.
You talk like it's a stout deal.
Yeah.
Well, I just give you everything. I just charge you for the material. I eat dinner off of you. And $5 is just about pay for that outlet, the box, and the wire taking the run away. You know it?
Yes.
That's wrong. Right, $5. I just probably.
Well, you can't make a living doing that.
Yeah, but we just did so much talking and cutting and carrying on.
Let me have your bill, Willie, and see it. Let me look at it.
You want to make payday today?
Yeah, I'll make a little of it.
Well, I don't want you to make a...
Well, that won't take long.
Would that be all right for you? I tell you though, best for me to know what it's all about. I'll tell you the reason why. Your latest man owed me $240-some now. See, here's the ceiling. Fits $250. And I moved a hot water heater for $10. That's moved from out in here outside then.
Mm-hmm.
And then electrical work, I got $40 here, and fixing pump, $12.
Yeah, you worried that pump way on more than that.
Yeah, but that's enough. That's enough right there. It shouldn't have cost that much, but...
No. It shouldn't have gone blew it. You know, that thing has been out of whack no telling how long. It's been a noisy thing, and since you put it in, I don't even know when it goes on.
Well, that little old fan thing, a flucker there, you know, flutter, it dries down, but that's because, you see this, when the load hits it, that armature shaft pulls up.
Yeah.
And then when the load leaves off of it, it settles back down.
Yeah.
But I was just trying to figure out what I got. Most of this electrical here is right in the wad here. There's a layout of them in there. I've got how many? See, I put four in the living room. Yeah, I put the two. Over here, two duplexes, right. And two over there is four. That's about right, I guess. I guess that's too much.
Well, let me tell you, I won't strain my count on that. I know I got that much in there right now. And
you got this much?
Yeah. Well,
you didn't even have to write this. I'll tell you the reason why.
Right.
I ain't no behind. I told you you didn't have to.
Yeah, but I ought to pay you something.
Yeah, you didn't even have to write this, because I don't know when I'll get around to trying to spend this.
Yeah, you don't want to.
I may not ever get around to spending all that much money.
Now, let's see. You didn't put on your thing today.
Yeah. I just added $5 to that I already done. I just scratched that $35 and put $40.
Oh, I see.
Is that all right with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Except I'll go to Sunday school right smart.
Yes, sir. I tell you, I gotta go. My time is running out, and
yeah.